Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Midtown Business Radio.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Midtown Business Radio. Stone, how you doing?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing well. I'm well rested. I didn't work much on Friday and rested a great deal over the weekend, but not you. You hit South Beach. You hit the Dolphins game, or should I say the Ravens game?
Yes, it was the Ravens game. The Dolphins came in second, close second. It was exciting.
You're a real fan, and I know that you and the kids enjoyed it, and you got to see friends and family and all that stuff.
That's right. It's been nonstop travel, though, for me, and I'm not used to it. You know, we went to Raleigh, 2-3 weeks ago, then San Francisco for Oracle Open World, and then I went to South Beach, and now I'm back here in the ATL.
So the Raleigh and the San Francisco trip, those are a lot of fun. For those of our listeners who don't know, in addition to, you know, slaving in the studio every week, week in and week out, sometimes they let us out to these conferences and trade shows, and we do these remote broadcasts, and we set up and we interview execs. And we interviewed a lot of smart folks at in both venues, but particularly at Oracle. There's a lot of IQ points there.
That's right. We got to see the America's Cup a little bit, and we got to interview a bunch of Oracle executives. It was quite a show.
It was fantastic, but almost nothing compared to the experience that we're going to have this morning here in the studio. This morning, a little bit later, we're going to hear from a lady with the Museum of Design Atlanta. We're going to talk with Chris Sanders. And we're going to have back in the studio from Randstad, Rebecca Harrell. But first up on Midtown Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce from Karen West PR, none other than President Karen West with a C, and Chad Shearer. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. We're thrilled to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. PR professionals, probably no strangers to this whole idea of having a conversation on a platform like this, or at least helping your clients secure those kinds of exposure opportunities. But all that said and done, please give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch, mission, purpose. What are you guys out there trying to do for folks? And maybe a little insight into who you try to serve.
Okay. We start out in 2005, so we're coming up on our eighth birthday. The primary focus of what we wanted to do was shorten the gap and disconnect between graphic design and public relations. So I brought the graphic design to the table. Karen brought the public relations to the table, both dealing with about the same level of experience, about, you know, at the time, 6-7 years under our belt. Since then, we have evolved into about a 90% public relations, 10% design.
That's why it's called Karen West.
That's why it's called Chad.
He made me do it. I really didn't want to go back to using my name, but Chad reeled us in. And we really, we're a lifestyle public relations firm, so mm-hmm. we really specialize in, you know, fashion, events, personalities. As of late, you know, we picked up a lot of restaurants, which is lovely, especially in Atlanta. We have an incredible culinary scene.
There's quite a few restaurants, huh?
Yeah, we're pretty
and celebrity chefs too, right?
Yes, yes. My Beltline is not pleased with it, but I'm not going to complain.
So now, a PR firm, PR has evolved over the probably, 5-10 years with the advent of social media. How do you guys attack social media?
I mean, honestly, it's a huge part of our day-to-day. I mean, you know, something that has been great about our firm, we were really pioneers when it came to social media, and it's something that we embraced early on, mm-hmm. in addition to embracing events and things where you're creating tangible experiences for consumers and media. But to us, not only we handle most of the social media accounts for most of our clients, and it's creating a voice and a personality that you can connect with and, you know, with your consumers,
right.
With your different demographics. But to us, it's also amazing. What I've seen is that a tweet essentially is a pitch a lot of times, or, you know, I'll put on my personal Facebook, hey, by the way, I just went by a new coffee shop, and all of a sudden I have, you know, the editor of Daily Candy calling the editor of Thrillist, right. saying, hey, whether it's my client or not. But really, I think it gives an opportunity to really emphasize what your brand is. And for us, you know, all of our different staffers, there's a personality behind the brand, and that's also critical. That not only do we have a CWPR, you know, Twitter and Facebook, but we all have our personal accounts because, you know, people are interested
You're
in
individuals,
that.
Right? And you have your own point of view.
Chad's wearing a white watch.
See that?
I mean, that,
it's very stylish.
How many people do you see with a white watch, right? You got these individual
That's his personal brand.
Exactly. So do you guys, you have a sweet spot? Do you work with a, or have more business with a certain sector or size
it's
of business?
Is it B2C, B2B?
Largely B2C. I mean, we operate, I believe it's 6 large format music festivals across the country.
Oh, wow.
We had so many restaurants in the area that we were the first PR company in the country to start our own restaurant week. So it's not neighborhood based, it's PR company based. We do Jeffrey Fashion Cares, which is a massive charity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're kind of across the board without pretending that we can do it all.
Right. So now, you've been around long enough to see PR change from where it used to be, oh, send out press releases, or there's a crisis, let me manage that, to a more interactive, creating dialogue, literally consumer at a time, right?
I mean, definitely. I think something that's really interesting about public relations, both Chad and I have been on the media side where, you know, I had a column and I was writing for magazines. Chad was, you know, running magazines. Mm-hmm. And so I really think that we approach, our company approaches PR from the side of a story.
Right.
And so when things were changing, especially when the recession hit, I think the PR firms that really excelled were people who embraced it and looked at it, you know, in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, something that's really critical, or for anybody who's looking for PR, is that the business person, whoever, whether it's a small mom and pop restaurant to a huge corporation, has to understand that they need to be active in that process or the campaign is not going to be successful. And so we really work on our end because we decided, you know, we didn't want to niche it out and just do restaurants or, you know, just do retail, but we really wanted to do things that we're passionate about. And that obviously gives us the greatest success, but also finding people that are equally involved and excited about their companies and the growth of their company. So
because when you're kind of prospecting this to a potential client, you want to be aligned philosophically, like that I'm going to require you to do some work on your end to be personally involved, right?
That's correct. And, you know, we're here to make, you know, your life easier. But at the same time, you know, the market, the media market, as you guys know, is changing so quickly. And so I've literally had phone calls at 1 o'clock in the morning saying, hey, by the way, somebody canceled. Can we get one of your clients on a morning show?
Right.
And so, I mean, we have our clients saying, you know, Matt Coggin, DBA Barbecue. Hey, buddy, you want this chance?
Right.
And he was like, yeah, I'm in.
That's it. And they have to know that. You got to manage that expectation, right?
We really, really do. But I feel like it's a very exciting time when it comes to public relations. But it's, you know, it's definitely a hard job. It's a lifestyle. And,
right.
You know,
and it's, like you said, it's 1 o'clock in the morning.
It is.
It's 24/7.
It is. It's all the time. And for us, I loved it. I mean, I'm very passionate about what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I graduated from college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to love every minute of every day.
Right.
And we have the great fortune to do that. And, you know, I get to work with my best friend and we have this amazing team. But we have to, every day we go in knowing that we have to be flexible because, you know, all of a sudden you have to learn Twitter and then there's Vine. And
right. And there's a new one next week.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so how do we incorporate this into, you know, making the best campaigns for our clients? And every single person and every single business that we work with is different. So you have to
customize, right?
Yeah. There isn't a blanket approach anymore. When back in the day it was like, okay, you're going to fax the press release and then you follow up with the phone call.
And
yeah.
You pitch the story. And
people are like, what's email? Yes. That's how old I am.
Yeah. So I want to talk about this social media thing, though, because as powerful as it is, and maybe because it's so powerful, it's also a fantastic opportunity to shoot yourself in the backside, right?
It sure is. It sure is.
Speak to that a little bit, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, of course, want to talk about the fact that they ate a grilled cheese sandwich or, you know, whatever, which is fine.
Yeah, why do people like taking pictures of their food so much?
I think that we're oversharers, but, you know, it's funny watching, you know, what people respond to. And, you know, we could have, you know, the most amazing photograph of a sandwich, but then I put up something silly with a dog and it's like, you know, 800 likes. You're like, what's going on? But I think that you have to be really careful with everything that you say. And coming from a journalist perspective, And we do the same thing. Is this something that you'd be willing to say on TV? Is this something that you're going to report? What's your intention? Are you being passive aggressive? On the flip side, you know, there's a lot of people that use social media now, and you know, us included. So if there's a consumer complaint, so, you know, we work with a lot of restaurants and say somebody is saying, well, listen, you know, I've been waiting for 20 minutes and, you know, I still don't have a cocktail at the bar.
That's right.
If we see that on Twitter, you know, we're immediately on the phone with the manager of the restaurant and say, hey.
Because monitoring is an aspect of this that people may not realize, that paying attention to what's being said is a role of PR firms nowadays, isn't it?
I really think it is. And I think that's something that people forget about social media, and especially when it comes to Twitter, is that it's more of a conversation and, you know, you're there to engage, and it's just not a promotional tool where you're
just. It's not just like, buy my stuff, 10% off. It's more of engage, like you said, engaging and having conversations with people. And you can diffuse a situation.
You sure can.
Like on Twitter, if they're complaining about the, you know, the waiter is late, you can respond and say, look, I just called the waiter. He's on his way, you know, and tell him I told you so.
Well, and I think it's tough for us because we're in a time where everybody thinks that they're a writer. Everybody has a blog.
Right.
Everybody has a Tumblr account. And how do we
face
that?
That's how I got this radio show.
Yeah, thanks for
I love it.
Everybody has a radio show.
Right.
No, but I mean, I think it's a great opportunity. But I also think there's been a loss of responsibility when it comes to journalistic ethics. And, and it's something that we face with every day. Or you have, you know, a restaurant that fires, you know, an employee for stealing. Well, they will, you know, get a Yelp account and, you know,
and make it their business to give them bad reviews, right?
So it's really an interesting time. I mean, I do love it, but I think it's a lot for the business owner, you know, to deal with when they're really trying to run a business. And that's where we come in with our expertise and our support, saying, all right, we're going to handle this for you, but you also need to follow up on your end as well.
And you have a methodology that gives them a way to deal with it, because it's overwhelming for the business owner, because this is all new to them and they got a job to do. They're trying to run a restaurant.
Exactly.
Know?
And it's also people, especially with that, within the service industry, it's people who aren't sitting behind a computer all day, which we are, you know, but we do, except when we're at events and doing cool things like festivals.
Fun restaurant.
It's torture.
How do you counsel a new client on how to involve their employees? Because, you know, everybody has a smartphone nowadays and everybody has access to all these social media accounts. Do you encourage them to get their employees involved and to talk about their day? Or do you, you know, some companies like are locking off, like no Facebook during the day, no, you know, social media. Like, where do you guys stand on that?
I think it depends on the industry. I mean, if you're in a restaurant, I would tell them, no, do not Facebook and Instagram while you're taking care of the guest. You know, but we, without everybody 100% committed to the PR process, the results are going to be very limited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be involved in your own success. And that's, you know, where it comes in. I mean, we've had accounts where the employees didn't buy in right away. They think that possibly they know better, or whatever the problem could be. And sometimes they do. But
how do you have that conversation with a client?
Sometimes what we do is, you know, obviously we have our main point of contact with who, you know, whatever the client is, and we sit down, and if it is important for their, you know, staff to engage, we'll go down and we'll sit with them and we'll explain why it's important.
And do you show them how to engage?
We do.
Because sometimes they don't know. You know, they're trying to help, but they may not be doing it the most efficient way.
And it's funny, you know, we work with so many different demographics, and it's literally people who, you know, they're like, I don't understand what's Facebook. And so we have to sit down and
Facebook 101.
Do Facebook 101. Or saying, listen, you know, you guys are at this restaurant every single day. Well, this is what we need from you. We're more than happy to take care of it, but people love behind the scenes, and that's what we're seeing in response. So if you could send us, you know, these 10 pictures today, we'll put it up on your behalf, because we know that you guys aren't allowed to, you know, walk around with your cell phones in your pockets during work. And so it definitely is an educational process, and it's something that we have to make sure that we're experts in, once again, even that it's changing every day. But we do. It's important to educate. It really is.
So now, if a company's out there and they're thinking about engaging with a PR firm or your PR firm, what are some questions they should be asking?
I think that you have to find somebody. I think you have to find a company that, like you said earlier, is going to be on brand with you.
Right, aligned and philosophically.
Absolutely. In this company, or how we act, we are 1,000% brand ambassadors for every single one of our clients.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter where we are, you know, that's a potential for a story. It's a potential for them to get a new client. And so I think that that's part of us is the gut reaction. Is this somebody that you can, you know, have that conversation with at 1 o'clock in the morning and that you feel good about representing right. your brand and vice versa? I think that you 1000% need to look at the company's results. I would recommend for them to talk to other business owners like that are within, you know, similar field. Like right. we always are like, here are testimonials or, you know, here's people that you right. can speak with. I also think that they should really look at their reputation when it comes to media. As far as, you know, I'm more than happy. Okay, well, I'm looking at their Facebook page and I see that on a regular basis, they're hanging out with a lot of media folks on a genuine level. Well, that is a great opportunity for our brand. So I definitely think that you need to do a little bit of research mm-hmm. for sure on multiple levels.
And can you share a little bit about how you got into events and why that's so important for your company?
I used to have a column in when the Sunday paper was still around, and I also was
the Sunday paper.
Do you remember
was
that?
It was a paper.
It was a weekly.
Just calling it paper.
No, the Sun. I know. Oh my God, what is this?
I have an iPad.
Yeah,
does it work on my iPad?
When there was actually print, but I covered events, and mm-hmm. I covered events for Jezebel Magazine, and you know, way back in the day, and I just really saw that as an opportunity to engage. And at the mm-hmm. time, you know, I was working for other boutique firms and people were charging on top of that. And then once again, like as the market was really changing, I felt like events were a huge opportunity to create urgency and get media and consumers in the door and to create an opportunity for people to interact with the businesses that we are representing.
Right. It's experience. You said it earlier, experiences are the new currency nowadays. People want, they're collecting experiences.
There's a lot of competition out there. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you know, we just love events and, you know, we've had the opportunity to work with festivals as large as 300,000 people wow. to creating intimate events or creating, you know, events of, you know, our own. And I think it's just something that we're passionate about and we love connecting with people. And, you know, it's funny, it's really easy to sit behind a computer and not have personal interaction.
Right. But face-to-face is important, right?
It is. And you learn so much. You learn things that you would never expect. And, mm-hmm. and I think that we all are so attached to our smartphones and everything else that we forget that you have to have that one-on-one interaction. Right. And it's critical. And it's critical in PR. I mean, right. it's everything we do. So, but I love that event side and I like to have fun. So
it goes hand in hand.
Okay, back to Chatty Chad.
You want to talk about my watch?
Well, we
he
could.
He just likes to hear you talk.
Like to hear you talk. I don't care what we talk. Exactly. No, what's next for you guys? Are you looking to expand, open offices and all that kind of stuff? You're going to stay focused here? What's coming in the next months, years for you guys?
We have actually been researching other markets. And for our competitors listening to this, yes, that is true. That has been going on for about 9 months now. We've been actively searching other markets. Because of the appeal of bigger companies like a Gucci or Diesel coming into the market, we've also been able to develop relationships in New York and LA as well. But I think we are going to be looking for a city like a Greenville or Savannah that is a junior version of Atlanta.
Right, so close, yeah. but not, you know, you can still manage it.
Yes.
You can drive there.
If I can drive there and get,
and
set somebody straight,
right? There, yeah.
then it's within reach.
And Savannah's such a cool town.
Yeah.
It's changing. It's very much so.
Absolutely. All right. Where can our listeners find out more? What's the best way for them to reach out and have a conversation with you guys or somebody on your team?
I would prefer that you reach out to us via email or Twitter. But you can reach us. Twitter is KarenWestPR. Our website is Karen. And Karen is spelled with a C for people that don't know Karen that well. It's CarenWestPR.com. And our phone number is 404-614-0006.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having both of you in the studio today. You got to come back. Rebecca will tell you, we love having folks come back. And maybe with a client or some other
or event,
event professional maybe that you're collaborating with or come promote an event.
We would love it. We would love it. We have some really wonderful clients. As you can tell, we're super passionate. But thank you so much for this opportunity. You guys are a lot of fun. So we definitely want to come back.
Terrific. Karen West with the C and Chatty Chad. Thank you so much. Hey, listen, you going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
We would absolutely love to. Thank you so much.
Please.
Terrific. Well, next up on Midtown Business Radio, we have with us the Grand Poobah, the Vice President with OND Method Teaming. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Chris Sanders. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic, and thank you so much for having me here.
So you learned something about PR?
I did. You know, well, we've worked with a number of PR firms, and this one is really exciting. I've enjoyed learning. I always like talking with PR folks because they help us out quite a bit.
So can you share a little bit about what you guys are up to?
Yeah, so I'm, as you mentioned, vice president of O&D. We're a specialty consulting firm based here in Atlanta. We also have an office in London. And we help our clients focus on the people dimension to solve business issues. You know, if you're a leader in a company, many of you can in the room here can sympathize with this. You're always dealing with business issues, whether it's the need to increase revenue, reduce cost, increase productivity, innovate faster, whatever it is. And if you think about it as a leader, you have really three levers you can pull to address an issue. You can deploy new technology, so technology is a lever. You can improve a process, so process is a lever, or you can focus on the people dimension. So at O&D, our core focus is that people dimension.
So you cracked the code on how to deal with people?
We're getting there. We've been doing this for 10 years. We were born out of a real-life business issue. We developed our science and methodology called method teaming. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a decade behind us, and there's still a lot to learn, but we're going along.
So now, should an individual work on maximizing their strengths or or working on their weaknesses? What's a better strategy for a corporation?
Well, what we teach at Method Teaming is that each one of us in the world, in this room, have a set of natural talents.
Right.
We call it a person's intellect. And it's a combination of natural behavioral patterns, motivations, and cognitive structure. And so you take all those things together, and you have a list of natural talents. And what we tell our clients is the best performance comes when you align your people's natural talents to the work they do every day.
Mm-hmm.
So that you've got the right person in the right role doing the right types of things at the right time. That leads to people having a lot more passion about what they're doing. I mean, you mentioned in the PR firm you love to love every minute of your day. Well, you're doing work that aligns with your natural talents. That's what we would say. And so that's the focus of method teaming in O&D.
So you do assessments to see where people are at, and then you help the company align the people with the tasks that need to be done?
That's exactly right. We'll typically, we can start at a company in a number of ways, but typically we will work with a leadership team. First off, this could be a CEO and his or her direct reports. And we will develop a program. We will develop the method teaming profiles, illuminate the natural talents of the team, but also look at the team's composition. You know, how much of one intellect do we have? Are we missing some of the other intellects? And it's very interesting. If you look at the composition of a team through the filter of the intellects, you can almost predict with great certainty the challenges that team is going to be having, and mm-hmm. also what that team is going to be good at collectively. So we'll start there, and then we'll help them sculpt the team and expand from there.
Now, is this something that, since you've been doing this a while, can you tell at a glance, or you need them to go through actual questionnaires?
That's an interesting question. You can. It is possible to look
at
someone.
You can do it.
It is possible.
Not everybody can do it,
right,
but you
right.
can.
With some degree of precision, it's never going to be 100%. I can probably do it a little bit more effectively than a person not trained. But the interesting thing about when you first meet someone and you're interacting with that person for the first time,
mm-hmm.
you're actually more often than not seeing their adapted behavior. You're seeing what that person wants you to see. You're
uh-huh.
seeing what that person is projecting. Now, sometimes that projected image is their natural self.
Right.
But sometimes it's not. So that's why it can be difficult.
What percentage is it? Their actual personality, or when
I think I don't have an exact number, but more often than not, it's not the accurate intellect.
Really?
So that's why when you look at recruiting processes and things of that nature, where you have a very limited amount of time with a person, many of those fail to get the right person in the end, because you're missing that intellect, which is invisible.
Mm-hmm.
So even if everyone's really good at what they do, if they're all good at the same thing, that's not much value.
That's what we would say. We would say the most high-performing teams in an organization are teams that are what we call intellectually diverse. Now, you've heard about a number of different other types of diversity, and those are all very important, and we need to continue focusing there. But this notion of intellectual diversity is surrounding yourself, if you're a leader, surrounding yourself with people who think differently from you, mm-hmm. who are motivated differently from you, who behave differently from you, because it takes all of these intellects to create a high-performing team.
Now, are there certain kind of types of intellect you should build a team around?
Yeah.
Well,
like mine.
Like yours.
Yeah,
it should just be
exactly.
your personality.
This should be this hub.
Exactly.
And build
you.
Exactly. What we say is that no one intellect is necessarily inherently better or worse than another intellect. You need
maybe
all...
off air you can tell us the good ones.
Right, right. Yeah. But my intellect is the good one, and right. your intellect is good too. But we in method teaming, we have four intellects.
Okay, what are they?
The first one is called EQ, external qualifier. This is a person who is high energy, takes lots of risks, you know, generally extroverted, those types of qualities, motivated by personal success and success around them. Then we have a networker. This person is a very empathetic person, oozes empathy, is very adept at maintaining and building very deep relationships. And whenever they look at a problem, they always look at who they're going to have to work through from a people perspective to get the answer. The third intellect is called PD, Project Director. PDs bring an engineering mindset to any situation. They're always looking for how to get from point A to point B, and they focus on the how. Mm-hmm. They are not risk takers. They're not risk takers, and they hate to be wrong. And then the fourth intellect is called a strategist. The strategist is the rarest of the four, only 8% of the population. And this intellect is the only intellect capable of on-demand creativity and thinking outside the box. And so what we would say is that a high-performing team is comprised of all four of these intellects aligned to roles that suit that intellect. Mm-hmm. So if you start off, say you're a leader or you're a VP or a CEO or a business partner, and you're of one intellect, maybe you're an EQ, your best chances for success are to make sure that you surround yourself and your executive team with the other three intellects.
Now, do you have a primary and a secondary? Is that how people typically are?
Well, of course, you know, with anything that relates to the human brain and humanity, we know we're complex people, we're complex creatures. What we do is our assessments or instruments, science, will call out a primary intellect for you. But in most cases, you have very strong secondary and even tertiary intellects mm-hmm. as well. So we know we're complex people, but we try our best to make it simple so you can actually act on the insights that you get from method teaming.
Now, and from a client standpoint, what is the pain a prospective client is having where they're like, I got to call these guys?
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about method teaming is it's highly applicable to anywhere work is performed in teams. It's most effective when you apply it to a specific business issue. Just like you would apply technology or process, you can mm-hmm. apply this people dimension. So some of the pain points we see from our clients who benefit from method teaming are very similar to the pain points that technology or process could serve. We're working with clients right now who have revenue gaps. So mm-hmm. we're applying method teaming to a sales environment. We're helping innovation is really big these days. It's the new buzzword and the key factor in sustained growth. We can help you get the people dimension right to build an effective world-class innovation capability. Productivity is another big one. Getting people aligned with their talents and work are highly much more productive. So retention, recruiting. So it really is any business issue that you can have. There's typically a way for you to focus on the people dimension to address that issue.
Now, are your clients large companies and you work within departments, or are they small companies where you work with the CEOs?
Right. So historically, we've worked with the larger companies, the Fortune mm-hmm. 500 companies, and we continue to get sustained growth out of
those
clients.
You get into one department, all of a sudden they're like, hey, you should try this, and then you work within the...
Exactly. So we'll typically start off with a leadership team, as we've mentioned, whether that's a C-suite, and we've done some C-suites at some very, very large Fortune 50 companies. What will end up happening is we'll end up expanding the program because method teaming has a language, too. So it really lends itself to becoming part of how you do business and how mm-hmm. you speak about and how you collaborate. So we'll typically expand to other departments and organizations. Now, that said, we're starting to see tremendous growth in the smaller company segment. In the startup arena, as well as
really, because that's important. That's critical. That's life or death, right? You make a wrong, like you're building your founding team, and you don't have the right fit. That could kill the company.
I'm glad you said those are exactly the phraseology we use. With the smaller your company, the more important every hire is.
Right, you can't make mistakes.
Exactly. So we're seeing a tremendous uptick in demand for the startup and the high growth for the reason you just mentioned. People are finally kind of starting to wake up to this notion that mm-hmm. People are your asset. They're also your largest expense. When you factor in the millennials and their behavioral patterns and motivations, all of a sudden you've got to do something really different in order to attract and retain
right.
enough of the right talent. So
how long does it take to get all this sorted out? And then once you do, is there like a booster shot? Is it like going to, the chiropractor?
It's a weekend workshop, and then, once every quarter you pop
right.
in?
Well, what we typically do is depending on the size of the team, we'll do is teams, from 5 to 8 up to several hundred team members. But we typically start with a program that lasts typically anywhere from half a day to 3 days, depending on what we tailor to your specific company, given your specific issue. So we'll do this program, and then we'll continue to expand. We have a roadmap of different services that we can continue to support you on. One of the more transformative services involves creating the method profiles for a team and then understanding where what you're missing, mm-hmm. what you're missing, what you have too much of, and helping you align the work around the roles. And so in that case, we call it team sculpting. That includes a roadmap that could be anywhere from a couple of months. It could focus on your next 3 or 4 critical hires. Or it could be, in the case of one of our very large clients, it could be a year-long sort of transformation where you're making decisions when you can about the kinds of intellects you have and what roles. Because it's often, you're dealing with people, and it's often not easy or quick to make really radical changes to the way people work. There's usually some things you can do out of the gate, some low-hanging fruit, as it were. But some of the larger organizations and larger teams, it does take a little bit longer for them to transform. But the results are, the results can be very compelling.
I believe with all my heart, if you can have a conversation like this with a regional vice president of a big company, you probably are going to have an open mind and may very well have an opportunity to for them to engage you and do some business. But the sales and marketing piece of this, it's got to be tough. I mean, isn't it a very competitive arena out there for you guys?
It's interesting. Our competitors are not necessarily other talent assessment providers because there are many of those, as you can imagine. But we're pretty well differentiated versus the talent assessment providers in that, in our methodology and the accuracy.
You carved out your own little corner of the sandbox, didn't you?
We have, and we've got a number of differentiators there. Where our competitors are typically those other two levers I talked about, right? Uh-huh. Because the leadership today, and things are changing, which is one reason why we're growing significantly, but most leaders, the easiest lever for them to pull is going to be technology
right.
or process, the whiz-bang. Everyone else is doing it. I need a new system to come in and do this. Oh, I need a SaaS. And, there are all these buzzwords and all these things out there. But what we're finding is the more progressive leaders who really do want to focus on something different, really do want to do something unique, and really want to focus on that talent dimension or that people dimension, are the ones that that are more receptive to our message. But as I said, what we're seeing, and we've seen it start to occur over the past decade, is more and more companies are waking up to this focus on people and moving well beyond just training people for new skills. That's been around for a long time. This is talent alignment is something new, and it's something innovative that a company can do.
But you do still have to keep getting the thought leadership out there. Like in our last segment, we talked about the whole PR platform. You've got to keep a consistent message out there. You've got to have those conversations. Once you start that, you can't let off the gas, right?
That's right. I mean, it's absolutely the engine for leads and that kind of a thing. We've got a number of channel partners. We do work with channel partners who give us leads. We are all actively involved in our networks and in our communities. I'll be at the Industry Leadership Summit down at Atlanta Tech Village here in November, and I'll be facilitating there. So we're involved in many different forums, and we're carrying our message through many different channels. But you're exactly right. You have to keep your foot on the accelerator at all times.
Love me some Atlanta Tech Village, too.
That's right.
I love those guys down
there. It's a wonderful environment.
Yeah, especially
really
if you're breaking into startups. There's hundreds of them right there in that building.
Exactly.
That's the perfect environment. Okay, let's leave our listeners with contact information. What are your coordinates?
Right, absolutely. Well, the best way to reach us is by going to our website. That's methodteaming.com, method teaming being all one word. You can also drop me an email at chris.sanders@methodteaming.com. We'd love to hear from you. And for all the listeners, you contact us. We'll give you a free consultation on your business issues and how a focus on the people dimension could help you.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming down and hanging out.
Thank you very much. I look forward to coming back again.
Yeah. Well, and when you do, bring a client or a colleague. And
we certainly will.
And we'll get the truth this time. We'll get their perspective. No, it'll be fun. I think that could make for a fun segment. Don't you think, Lee?
How you guys work together, what pain they had, how you guys help them align their leadership.
That sounds fantastic. Absolutely. Thank
Terrific.
You.
Hey, hang out with us while we visit with our next guest.
We'll do.
All right, Lee, next up on Midtown Business Radio this morning, we have back with us to the Business Radio X microphone from Ronstadt, Regional Vice President, Georgia Office and Administration Division, Miss Rebecca Harrell. How you doing, Sunshine?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. Looking good. Sounding good. I bet you've got some stuff to share with us since we saw you last time.
What you been up to? Well, we have been, always busy, and I loved hearing when talking about the people because it makes such a difference, especially for our business. You know, with Ronstadt, we are the second largest global HR services and staffing firm in the U.S., and we actually are headquartered for our U.S. Operations here in Atlanta, and we're going to be moving in actually right down the road out of Cobb County, staying in Cobb County right down the road from our current offices, so we're very excited about that move next month.
So now you guys are placing workers left and right?
We are. You know, what the great thing is, and I love to always say this number, we put on average 100,000 people to work every week. Can you imagine that? 100,000. It's so impactful.
Now, how about here in Atlanta? How's the Atlanta job market?
Yeah, the Atlanta job market is actually still pretty strong. You know, one of the things that, we always look at, of course, is Georgia unemployment and looking at how the rate actually has dropped to about 8.7% in August from an 8.8% in July of 2013. And this, of course, is higher than the U.S. unemployment rate of 7.3. But, last year or a year ago was about 9%. So we definitely are seeing a drop in that. Of course, in August, we added Georgia added about 3,000 jobs over the last month. So a little up about 82,000 for the year. So very, very strong numbers. You know, I think in Atlanta, as we see in trends in the market, it's always about, of course, growth in certain areas.
Right.
You know, we're seeing a focus, of course, in growth in specific industries. But I think the great thing is we're seeing people moving into Atlanta still. You know, we're seeing companies growing. You know, as Chris was sharing earlier, companies are definitely investing in their people. So that's made a difference, of course, in our business of placing great talent.
Now, are there some industries that are hiring more than other industries?
Well, again, I think I shared with this last time, we're still seeing, of course, healthcare, definitely that industry is hiring, is picking up. Of course, large groups and hospitals are ramping up because of, increase in patient volume, and healthcare reform is definitely a cause for that. Engineering, even though we had maybe a little bit of a downturn in July, job postings have definitely remained steady, and very stable throughout the year. So we're seeing, more jobs requiring, of course, bachelor's degrees or specific industry certifications. And always finance and accounting, that's a big demand for permanent placement. We've had a little bit of a slow hiring, of course, in the temp to hire type world. But, companies have money to spend and they're definitely spending it on, staff and definitely hiring permanent talent out there. And we're also seeing a huge demand in, of course, CPAs and public accounting.
So now, can you share a little bit about how a company works with Ronstadt? Like, what's the What's their challenge, and how do you guys help solve it?
Yeah, so as I shared before, I think the big thing is, you know, we put people to work. You know, we make a difference in people's lives every day, both for our clients and our talent. And I think the big thing what we always want to make sure of is finding the right fit. You know, as Chris was talking earlier, you know, we want to make sure that we have the right person on board on their team, mm-hmm. Because, you know, that company, whether they are, you know, a healthcare company that needs strong executive admins or data entry or customer service, or in a finance and accounting world that needs strong, you know, CPAs or, you know, AR clerks or staffing accountants, you know, it's such a critical piece. And so for us is really working with those clients and making sure we have a strong partnership with them and understand specifically, you know, what they're looking for and make sure we have a good match for them.
Now, but what's the advantage of working with you as opposed to just hiring the people directly themselves?
Well, one of the things, you know, from a temporary type space is, of course, if you have maybe a project base, you know, maybe you only need somebody for one day, one week, one month, you know, they're employees of Randstad. So they are a direct extension of us. And so we want to make sure that, you know, our talent that we have and that we're providing to you, to our clients are the right fit. So, of course, the luxury of having a temporary type role is somebody doesn't have to stay permanently. It could just be very project-based. And we have a lot of clients that utilize that option. And, of course, we have a lot of great talent out there that enjoy kind of having a temporary type position. You know, it gives them some flexibility and it gives some exposure sometimes to varied industries that I always get to have. And then, of course, we have attempt to hire, which a lot of times it works well for someone. Kind of try before you buy, you know, mm-hmm. make sure it's the right fit for you on both sides, both on our talent and our clients. And then, of course, on our permanent side is really working with them and making sure if they have a need that we can provide that right person. And we do a lot of our, you know, assessments and making sure we understand. And they don't have to go through 800 resumes, you know, to find the right person. We can actually present, you know, that top 3 to 5 people, and that typically is going to be a hire for us.
So when you're working with a company, I guess first you have to kind of immerse yourself in their culture to make sure you know exactly who they are and what they want. Absolutely. So that you can, you know, pick the right person for them.
Absolutely. And again, it gets back to that partnership. You know, one of the things that I feel like we do a really good job, or actually a great job, is really talking with our clients. We meet with our clients face to face, you know, especially here in Atlanta. You know, I have offices all over Atlanta, and my teams are out there meeting with both prospects and customers and understanding, because it's a timing issue. You know, somebody might not have a need right now, but we want to be that first point of contact for them when that need does happen.
So in our 10 o'clock show, we were exploring women in the workforce. And we had a couple of folks that have been featured in a recent publication for their work in that arena. We had a nonprofit that's really investing in young girls. We have some women in this very room. So I have a question. What is it? What do women want? That's my question. What do women want from their employers? And is that even a valid question? Is it different than what the general population needs and wants?
It's a great question. You know,
that was a fantastic question.
Question
of the day. yeah, you know, Stone, I think, you know, we actually had an engagement index back in Q2 of this year, and we focused on what women were looking for in the workplace, you know, because women actually make a greater percentage of the overall workforce. You know, Georgia companies really should be focusing on engagement strategies around this key demographic. You know, and we actually did some surveys, and 57% of the women felt like their salaries are adequate for their position and level of responsibility. You know, of course, 49% of women thought they were likely to get a raise by the end of this year. 24% of the women thought they'd get promoted by the end of the year. So that was very good. 59% actually are expected to grow within their careers within their current employers. So that was very strong. But I think the key is, you know, 9 out of 10 women agree that their relationships with their colleagues and their direct supervisors have a huge impact on how happy they are in their jobs. And I really believe in that. I think you have to enjoy who you work with and who you're both on the management side as well as your peers. You know, so I think, again, you know, companies are really investing in our folks here. And, you know, they're likely, you know, from a position, you know, when we have companies that have a good reputation as a great place to work, you know, women want to be a part of that. So I think, you know, again, you know, it's a very big focus for us. And I think companies need to focus on that as an engagement strategy.
Now, but are there specific things they can be doing? Are there strategies or their initiatives they can be taking part in order to attract and retain the best women workers?
Yeah, I mean, anytime, you know, we look at, you know, what's important to them. So sometimes as flex schedules, of course, just having a career progression for someone. As I mentioned to you, you know, getting promoted by the end of the year, you know, having raises, you know, looking at their relationships, you know, growing within their own, you know, company and being able to see that. I think, again, you know, for us is, you know, whether it's, you know, looking at specific things that are important, it's always about that company understanding that.
So they want to be heard. They want to be kind of see that there's a path for them. And
absolutely.
That the company's listening to their needs and is flexible around their schedules and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, you know, we have to look at what makes the best business sense. But, you know, definitely for them is, you know, they want to be confident in the future of their current employer. And the great thing is we're seeing, you know, around 59% were very confident in the future of their current employer. So, you know, there is still a few that are looking for new jobs, you know, and that's always something that, you know, for us is it's very important, you know, even internally as well as externally with our clients. So, again, I think we have to be always, you know, engaging with our teams and understanding kind of what their needs are, what they're looking for.
Well, I like the idea as a small business owner, and we're growing, I like the idea of Rebecca and her team knowing about our organization, having a feel for our culture, knowing what we need and want, and then us not having to reinvent the wheel every time that we need to bring someone else on to help us. That's got to be a tremendous advantage. And then as far as expanding, if we live into this dream that Lee's crafted for all of us, and we need people in Birmingham and Charlotte and points beyond, Ronstadt can help us, right?
Absolutely. So the great thing is, you know, we have offices all over, you know, the country and you know, internationally. So, you know, as you mentioned, you know, we want you to think Ronstadt is your first person right. And company to look for. And it does make a big difference because whenever there is opportunities or, you know, growth within your organizations, you know, it is for us is looking at and say what's going to make the best sense. And sometimes we are the best resource, sometimes we're not. And we want to be able to, you know, share that with you as well. So, again, you know, it's really about the partnership, understanding, you know, we kind of come in a consultative type approach and really kind of dig deep and understand your business and then offer some suggestions or ideas around what makes the best sense for you and your teams.
Well, you have a unique vantage point, too, because you're helping organizations like ours. That's your work. That's your job. That's your craft. But then internally, you have to develop your own team and develop your own people. That's got to be a real challenge, I think, to do both and do them both effectively, but it also must really put you in a fantastic vantage point.
It does. You know, we have such great teams here in Atlanta across all of our boards and, of course, across the country and with Ronstadt. You know, one of the things I think that we really pride ourselves is our own internal teams and really showing that career progression for them. We definitely, you know, do our engagement surveys internally so we can figure out what they're looking for. You know, we were actually just voted through the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the number 4 best places to work here in Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, again, and that's all about employee engagement. So, you know, they're telling us what they want, what they need, and hopefully we're providing that to them. So, you know, our focus, of course, is about engagement. You know, we work a lot with our management teams and make sure they know what, you know, their, you know, consultants are and salespeople are needing and wanting. And of course, we look at the retention piece. That's very, you know, critical because the staffing industry has a very high turnover rate and ours is one of the lowest ones. So, you know, I think it gets back to we want to make sure we're hiring the right people on the front end, you know, doing our due diligence, just like we work with our clients, but also we want to keep them and we want to retain them and we want to show an opportunity for them to grow within the organization.
So now you mentioned that the Atlanta job market seems to be on an uptick here. Is it the same with Ronstadt? Are you guys hiring?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I just hired someone recently. Yeah, again, you know, we see growth within our own, especially for my office and administration focus. You know, we're adding additional people and also, of course, in our finance and accounting teams, you know, our Ronstadt professional group, you know, within our strategic accounts. You know, so we're constantly growing and adding additional people.
And if somebody wanted to learn more, if a company wanted to engage with you guys, and if somebody wanted to get employment, is there a website?
There is. So actually, you can go to all-in-one. It's www.ronstadstaffing.com, and that's RANDSTAD staffing.com. And you can go, of course, and see who we are, what we do. You know, our core values are to know, to serve, to trust. And we really hope that comes across to our clients, but also to our talent. It's very important to us to make sure we have the right people on our teams.
Well, how refreshing it is not only to talk again to Rebecca, and we already knew this about her, someone who is that invested in people and growing people and helping them realize their dreams, but also someone who's actually hiring. That's way cool.
Yes, absolutely.
That's got to be fun to tell people at the cocktail party, right?
Absolutely. Well,
and we're hiring.
Absolutely. Well, and that's why I said, I mean, putting 100,000 people to work every week, I mean, that is just so impactful. So, you know, I'm glad to be a part of such a great organization, and I'm just looking forward to, you know, watching us continue to grow.
Well, keep up the good work, and just come hang out with us every
other
week or so.
Absolutely. I always love to come here.
Hang out with us. We got one more guest we're going to visit with.
Sounds good.
And I think Lee may have forgotten how to pronounce her last name. I'm going to go on the 50-50 chance. Please join me in welcoming this lady from the Museum of Design Atlanta, sometimes affectionately known as MODA, Laura Flushi.
Oh, that was really good.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
What a patient lady. We started you out in the cheap seats. I thought I saw you nodding your head a little bit. You may have been taking some notes. I don't know if you were evaluating guest performances. Did you learn anything in the last hour?
Absolutely. I learned a lot. So I have a whole new set of resources here to make my life easier.
Fantastic. So what are you guys up to out there at the museum?
Well, at MODA, we're just around the corner, by the way, at 16th and Peachtree, we are in the process of getting ready to put up our last exhibition of the year. We put up 3 to 5 exhibitions every year. We don't have a permanent collection, so we are able to dedicate our full energy to any single exhibition at the time that we have it up. And we will be opening a new exhibition on October 26th. And it's called Paul Rand, Defining Design.
Can you talk a little bit of Museum of Design? What are you guys trying to promote, and what is the art of design?
That's a great question. We see ourselves as sitting firmly between fine arts organizations and the design industry. So we are a nonprofit organization, a museum. Our mission is to put on exhibitions, to stage experiences, and to provide education that demonstrates design as being both a noun and a verb, let's say, something you can actively do, but something that produces a product that you can see or hold or make a phone call on or use to get clean water to people in Africa. And we see design, we define design as being at the convergence of creativity and functionality. So our exhibitions focus on that particular convergence and how objects that make our everyday lives and that make the world a better, make our everyday lives better and make the world a better place come into being. What processes bring them into being?
She's answered that question before. That was very well done.
Thank you.
Backstory, how did you get involved in this line of work? Did you have a real job before all this?
I did. I had a real job. I've had a very fortunate life with lots of adventures in it. I have a graduate degree in one in art history and one in Roman archaeology. And I spent 15 years living in Rome, Italy, where I taught archaeology and art history to American undergraduates and was the assistant dean of an American program there. And then La Dolce Vita was wonderful. It was terrific to live in Rome. But I looked down the long path and saw that I could be doing this same job for the next 25 years and thought, maybe it's time for a new adventure. And I came back to Atlanta and found a position with the museum as associate director. I was fortunate to start with the museum at the time that MODA, which is an organization that's about to be 25 years old, actually, we were located downtown and we were preparing to move to the Midtown Arts District. So we were preparing to move to our current location at the corner of 16th and Peachtree. I got in on that whole process. How do you move? How do you learn to live in a new building? And then have been involved ever since. I became the executive director in January of this year.
So now, how do you put your stamp on this? Now that you're the executive director, how do you kind of put your vision into action?
Well, that's something I've been working really closely with MODA's board of directors on. And we've done a couple fairly dramatic things in the past 8 or 9 months. The first is that our board of directors sat down and said, we need a new mission and vision statement. Ours is not specific enough. It's not guiding us well enough. And they put that into place at the end of last year. So we really came down and said, we're going to define what design is for MODA. It's the place between, you know, where creativity and functionality meet. And we're going to say, and this is something that I believe wholeheartedly in, that design is a catalyst for creating change in the world. And that's what we're really going to emphasize. So that's something near and dear to my heart. It's something the board believes in. And so we work together to show people that design is a great methodology for solving the problems that we have here in the 21st century. It's something that's really very accessible to everybody.
Well, like you said earlier, that design is a noun and a verb. Or do you put things in action where people can learn and immerse themselves in design, or is it something that you just walk through a museum?
Well, that's a great question.
That's two great questions for people scoring at home.
High score. Museums, of course, traditionally are passive places where people go for contemplation, to read what's on the walls,
right,
to look carefully. And that is something else that we've been reevaluating very closely at MoDA. We understand that there are new generations of people who don't just want to be spoken to from the walls, but want to be involved.
Right.
And want to be involved in learning processes that are active and that are participatory. And so MoDA is working very hard to bring that into our exhibitions and our events. From the end of this year forward, all of our exhibitions will have participatory pieces. So if you want to learn about Paul Rand, one of the great graphic designers of the middle and late 20th century, you can learn about him by reading about him, but you can also try out the processes that he used. In fact, we even have some of the assignments he gave to his graphic design students, and we're going to put them into action. So you can come in and try out the exercises he gave to his students. We are also installing at the front of our museum what we call the design bar, and we want it to be a place that people can come and hang out. There's a menu, and you can order up a design project, and you can sit there and with your child make a simple craft or participate in a design exercise, or if you don't have kids, you can bring a friend, or you can come in alone and actually engage in the design process and get an idea of what it is to design something. So we're doing, yes.
Now,
the answer is yes.
Do you have activities like, okay, Chad's here. He's a creative director. Mm-hmm. Is there activities for somebody that's a leader in the creative space like him where you can tap into some of the creative minds that are here in Atlanta?
Absolutely. We have a whole series of programs that we offer every month. We have a social program that Chad might like called Drink and Design. It happens the last Thursday of every month. That's
design
not it.
That.
So you know Chad.
We've met. It's an evening event. You come in, you maybe have a tour of the exhibition, but it's also an opportunity to network with people who have similar interests,
right,
to you.
Because design's important to business, and there's business people that their business is built on design, so you have a way to tap into that group.
Yes, we do. In fact, at this moment, we're in the process of building a roster of what we call design partners.
Oh.
Which are corporations that they buy a corporate membership. They have the opportunity to use our space, to participate in networking events, and they are not all design firms. They're people who understand that the process of design and design or design thinking, as we call it, is something that can be used just as effectively to make Business Radio X work better as it can to make our iPhones work better.
Right. So now you have a current exhibit right now?
We do. For one more week, we have an exhibition up that's called Barrique, Wine, Design, and Social Change.
Ah, nice.
It's nice. It's got a lot of really nice things about it. It comes to us from central Italy, and it comes to us from a substance abuse treatment center in central Italy.
Mm-hmm.
The place is called San Patrignano. It's absolutely remarkable. They have 13 residents right now. Those residents stay in treatment there for 3 to 4 years. They don't pay a single penny. They can bring their children. There's a hospital. It really is almost like a little town. And in their time there, there's over 50 different workshops at San Patrignano. You learn a craft or a skill or a trade that you can take into the world, and you learn to be proud of what you're able to do. One of the things they do at San Patrignano is, they're in central Italy, they produce a lot of really fabulous wine. But they can only use their wine barrels for 3 to 5 years, and they're made out of gorgeous French oak. So a designer was, a designer named Maurizio Riva was touring the facility a few years ago, and he heard about the fact that they're getting rid of all these wine barrels, and he said, don't throw another one away. And he went out to the design community, largely Italian, and said to the designers, would you all agree to design an object that could be created out of the wood from a used wood wine barrel, and then we will take those designs and we'll have the carpentry shop at San Patrignano create those objects. And everybody said, absolutely. So what we have on exhibition are these really beautiful objects that are crafted out of old wine barrels. You can see the red stain of the wine and the sugars of the wine on parts of the wood. And they represent creativity as a changing force for the people there mm-hmm. at San Patrignano, but they also represent a really great collaboration between designers who've made it big and people who have amazing craft skills they've acquired in the process of substance abuse treatment.
And this is, it's going to be there for another week?
It will close on Sunday.
Oh, so you better hurry.
Run, don't walk.
Better get out there fast.
So now, are there any other benefits of MODA that you'd like to share with the Atlanta community? That it seems like that, you know, we're here to help you get the word out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we want more and more people to kind of take advantage of this opportunity to participate in some of these exhibitions coming up.
Mm-hmm. There are lots of ways to participate. For example, this Thursday we have social hours, drink and design. We also have a program called Design Conversation, which is often a lecture or a discussion. And this Thursday evening, we'll be having a lecture that is about the slow food movement in Italy. It goes nicely with our exhibition. So the idea that was born in the 1980s in Italy, that we should eat slow rather than fast food. So that's great. Another thing that MODA is very involved in, though, is education, particularly for children. We run a camp that teaches children Lego robotics and helps them improve their science and technology and engineering and math skills while throwing some design and some art
right.
into that. And we are also prototyping this fall a design thinking program that we will be taking out to community organizations like the Boys and Girls Clubs, as well as the public schools, in order to teach children an innovative process for solving problems that they can use in really every aspect
right,
of their life.
Right, that critical thinking.
That's exactly right. Critical thinking, collaboration, communication, mm-hmm. all those things that help us work together and innovate.
So now, if somebody wanted to learn more, the website?
The website is www.museumofdesign.org.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. Thank you to all of the guests here today. And we will see you all next week on Midtown Business Radio.